So I go back, and the next time I go through it again. And for the last episode, I was like, holy cow, I thought this was good. Oh, geez, like this one where I really goofed up. I gotta fix it, man.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The King stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern, live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. I am Kyle, and today we're welcoming back Dan Passarelli, founder and CEO of Market Taker Mentoring, author of multiple options trading books. Speaking of which, I heard through the grapevine that you're actually working on a new one.
Oh, yes, that's right. It's in the works. Just kind of started it, so got a little bit of time till it comes out.
What's the planned subject on this one?
Yeah, so this is, I'm kind of going more from the trader perspective over to the investor perspective.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's all on basically improving your current investment strategy, your long-term buy and hold strategy by using options as an overlay, like covered calls and cash-cured puts.
Oh, so just ways to improve the buy and hold. So instead of just holding it, we might as well sell some calls against it to generate a little bit more income, like kind of that idea.
Yeah. It's been proven to increase returns while reducing risk. And, you know, geez Louise, if you can do both of those things, you're doing pretty darn good.
The only thing that I don't like about that is it caps some of your upside. So I'm curious how you approach that. Like, what do you do to keep from completely capping off your upside?
Well, you know, how do you avoid a hangover?
Well, you just don't drink as much.
That's right. You don't have as much fun the night before, right?
Right.
So that's kind of how this strategy works. You know, you don't necessarily always make as much on the upside, but you do a lot better. You lose less on the downside. And in those sideways markets, holy moly, that's the real sweet spot.
Right. That's another great point, too, is how many people focus on making more when really there's a lot of low-hanging fruit on the losing less side of the equation.
Yeah. I mean, if you are a buy and hold stock person, I mean, Right now, you have stocks in your portfolio that are lower than they were when you bought them. If you were doing covered calls on them, then that's okay because you would be grinding that back and you might even be profitable even if the stock is down.
What about when the stock, like if you are just not very good at picking, the time to enter and you buy like the very, very tippy top and you sold a bunch of calls against it up there, like what are you doing? Like how are you protecting yourself from in that situation? Sometimes you may be stuck holding something for, you know, a long time before you can get back to the profitability. Are you just holding that and trying to sell against it and erode that, or do you just cut your losses at some point?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the situation, right? Because, like, I mean, let's forget about options altogether, right? If I buy a stock today and, maybe I follow a service or I do my own research and today this stock looks great. Its balance sheet is fantastic. Its earnings are growing. I'm going to buy it. And 6 months later, they merge with some company that's doing lousy and, you know, now their earnings are looking like they're going to shrink and blah, blah, blah. I mean, even if that stock's down, I'm going to sell it. I'm going to get rid of it. I can make my money back on a better stock easier than holding this one and waiting forever. I don't have to do that.
The key in your scenario there is that the actual underlying thesis has changed at this point. You're not making decisions just based on what the stock is doing price-wise. You're making those decisions based on your underlying research. And has that thesis changed then is what it sounds like?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. You know, which is a lot different than how I look at it when I'm looking at it with my trader brain.
Yeah, that's I'm having a hard time switching to that mindset here. Like, he said at the beginning this was an investment mindset in this new book. I gotta make that switch too.
Right. Because it's funny. I mean, I've had market taker mentoring for, this is our 17th year of training option traders. Mm-hmm. And that's mainly what we focused on is trading.
Right.
You know, just the short-term price action, not looking at balance sheets or stuff like that. But a lot of the traders that we work with, I mean, if they're successful at trading, they build up some money and they want to take that and invest it for later.
Yeah. Yep. That's something I've heard a lot from people who have traded successfully is that it's a pit stop trading. Like eventually you're going to turn into an investor if you're good at trading.
Yes.
Yes. So are there any other ways that this book differs from some of the other stuff you've done then? I imagine it's probably not as heavy into like the theoreticals. Because your previous book's more focused on like options, Greeks, and like maybe understanding more about like the mechanics of the options themselves.
Yeah. Oh gosh, there's a few things. I mean, first, there are some covered call books out there. Mm-hmm. Books on the wheel strategy. And when I first talked to like one of the publishers I was talking about, they're like, oh yeah, you know, there's books like that out there. I'm like, no, there's not books like this out there. Because for me, when I have worked in the past with students on investing with options, I mean, I show them the white papers that have been written, the studies by professors, unbiased professors who wrote, look, they're proven to outperform in the long run while lowering your risk, increasing your Sharpe ratio, like they actually work. But all too many people, they try them and they don't work and they give up and they say, oh no, these don't work.
Right.
So that's kind of the difference about this book. It's not just, oh, here's what a covered call is. You know, that's just the first couple of chapters. The really main body of the book will be about how the mindset is so important. Mm-hmm. And about how managing is so important and how really understanding your objective with it. These are the things that actually make it work.
I remember we talked a lot about trading plans the last time we had you on, and I think you were actually the first person to even have the idea of having a plan to follow your plan. Like, so is some of those ideas maybe kind of working their way into the book? Like this is helping you build your plan to follow the plan?
Yeah, it is. It is. because, I mean, the enemy seldom agrees with your plans. So,
all right. That's a good point.
you can come up with a plan, but if you don't stick with it and if you're not able to make it work, then it's not going to work.
I know in my experience, and I don't have faith in a plan, it's because I don't fully either understand it or I don't have full confidence in it.
Right.
So I imagine a lot of it is going to be probably trying to help somebody understand, like you almost have to build it with them. Like they have to know what goes into it. It has to become their plan. So how do you cross that gap then?
Yeah, I am so, I'm such a big believer that every trader or every investor does it different than everybody else.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And so I lay out in the book, and well, we should probably talk about the Substack in a minute because I put these ideas on my Substack, which is the Substack is about the book, and I have a podcast that's about the book. It's all sort of one thing, but I lay out that you can have different objectives, like the two main ones are skate or trade. Mm-hmm. Hey, look, I'm going to sell this call on the stock and I hope I don't get assigned because I just want to keep this premium. Or trade, like actually trade out of the stock. Like, hey, I'm going to sell this call on the stock because if it gets to that point, its dividend yield isn't really that great anymore. I've owned it for a while. I'd rather put that capital to better use. I hope I get assigned. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like that's one use of covered calls that all too many traders just, they forget about. They don't
use. That's a great point. Yeah, like using it for your exit strategy almost. Like, hey, I'm ready to get out, but I mean, I don't know. I don't want to just hit sell right now and give up on it. Like I can at least capture some premium by selling a cover call a week out and just letting it get assigned. And if it doesn't get assigned, then great. I get to sell another one.
Yep. And if you end up accidentally skating on a couple of those in a row, it
usually just you're pretty happy.
Yeah, you're pretty happy, right?
Huh. Man, okay. So yeah, there's some great ideas in here. Let's go back then. You kind of briefly mentioned the Substack, and we were talking a little bit beforehand. You said that you had launched a new podcast and that the Substack and the podcast and the book are all kind of like working together. So maybe kind of tell me about like what the plan is or the vision with that is and how that's going.
Yeah. So I was thinking about writing the book and I was thinking, man, you know, I'm going to be sitting here. I'm going to be just, you know, in my head drawing from my 30 years of doing this, coming up with ideas. And I want to get some of them out now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I thought it might be kind of fun just to do this kind of crazy experiment of I'm going to do a podcast about writing a book on options investing. So basically what I do is every chapter has like two or three episodes of it.
Mm.
You know, like every chapter makes two or three podcast episodes.
Right.
So I just kind of go through what I'm writing. And because it's a different medium, I'm able to flesh it out a little bit differently. And then I started thinking, wait, this is an audio only podcast, but sometimes I need some visual examples.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, well, I'll just create a Substack too that goes with it. And then I can put some like video extra episodes up there where you can really get that hands-on experience where you get to see some of the charts that I'm using and such. And then I just write a whole bunch for the Substack too and give trade ideas and show like what covered call and cash geared put trades I'm making in my IRA today and all that.
So is it like the chapter, you go work on a chapter, you have it all kind of like fleshed out in your mind, and now you go do an episode on it and like kind of share what the plan is? Or are you working through that like on the episodes themselves? Like, are you actually like kind of coming up with chapter three is going to be, I think it's going to be this, but let's talk it out with the, you know, somebody or some people and kind of maybe clarify what we think chapter three is going to become. Like, are you writing the book in the moment? Or are you kind of going back and reviewing and recapping like what you're doing?
Yeah. I mean, my original thought was, well, I'll write the chapter.
Yeah.
And then I'll kind of, you know, not summarize, but, you know, draw from it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty funny. Like the last episode that I recorded, Well, let me back up for a second. Like my writing process is this. So I'll sit down and I'll write. I've got an outline, but you know, new thoughts come into your head. And you know, if you've been a trader for as long as I have, you have ADHD and it's like, oh, hey, wait, let's put that in there.
Right.
So like I write the best, you know, section part of the chapter that I can. And then, you know, you write so many words and you're like, all right, man, I'm done for the day. Yeah. And I try to write it as if it's the finished copy, but I know it's not. So I go back and the next time I go through it again. And for the last episode, I was like, holy cow, I thought this was good. Oh, geez, like this one where I really goofed up. I gotta fix it, man. You know?
I think we've all been there.
Yeah. And so then I fixed it and I'm like, oh yeah, this is okay. I'm happy with this. Okay, this is good. Mm. So then I started recording the episode. And, you know, there were a couple of parts where I took some chapters and just, you know, had them there in my notes. And I'm recording it. I'm like, oh, this is still bad. Oh,
oh no.
Yeah. So yeah, in that case, it kind of goes both ways. Sometimes the stuff that I come up with on the podcast, say, oh, you know what? I ought to put that in the book. So it kind of goes both ways.
It's kind of fun. It really does seem like, to really understand material, you need to be able to like teach it and explain it to somebody else, right? So it's almost like the podcast is like your step of proofing the book material. Like, can I explain this succinctly? And if you can't, then like, you know, you got to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fascinating like look at the process of writing a book. What's the name of the podcast before we get too far past that?
It's called Wealth Building with Options.
Wealth Building with Options. Let me make a note. I'll make sure that that is linked in the show notes because it sounds like something people should be checking out.
Yeah, yeah. I'm putting a lot of love into it.
How long have you been doing this then? How many episodes are you up to?
We have, I think our 7th episode comes out tomorrow.
Okay. So if you've gotten past 4, then you're doing better than I think 75% of podcasters out there. So what else have you been up to other than the book then since the last time we talked? It's been, I think, February we had you on last time. It's been about a year now.
Holy cow, has it been that long?
Right? It doesn't seem like it, does it?
Oh my gosh, no, it doesn't at all. Well, so, I mean, back then I was probably talking about a lot of the things that I'm doing with Market Taker Mentoring, mm-hmm. which is our option trader education. We do a little bit on investing, we're mostly traders. And we're still doing that. You know, we're with the market. I mean, for people who are watching this around the time that we recorded it anyway, you know, the market's been a little crazy. So there's a lot of folks coming to us for one-on-one coaching. So still doing all that. But I mean, I did kind of pull back a little bit from that business, still creating all the content, still mm-hmm. doing all the trainings and working with the students, not giving up on that. But, you know, pulling back from the business end of it to really focus on the podcast and on the Substack and the book.
Right, right, right. The things to grow the business now.
Yep, yep.
Have you increased the team? Have you hired any other coaches or other people that you think... I'm trying to think of how to word that. I don't know how to word that. Have you hired somebody else to help you do that work then?
I have, yeah. We just brought Mike on board, who is the newest member of our team. Mike is part of our trader success team because, I'm sure you know, and anybody who's even tried trading knows, the hardest part of it is just the mental aspect, I think, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's going to be... Mike's role is helping people not know how to trade better, but get into that mindset and help decide how do I get from where I am now to where I want to be as a trader? Do I have to read a book or take a class or just, you know, get my head right, do some meditation? What is it? And so that is something that I think is super important. So we brought on Mike just to do that.
Nice. Maybe might have to get his contact info. Do you think he'd be interested in chatting? I love meeting new traders that...
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. To set that up. Okay. Well, you kind of hinted at my next question then when you talked about how the markets have changed since the last time we talked. I was going to ask if you've had to make any new adjustments yourself since this new administration has injected, shall we say, a fresh injection of volatility to the markets.
Yeah. You know, like the market to me always has different volatility regimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're in a different volatility regime, and the word regime is not tied to anything except volatility itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it always changes over time. It's always the same, but it's always different. And so did I have to make any changes? Yeah, you know, of course. But I'm going to, and I'll tell you what, it was kind of a coincidence that I'm doing all this writing on, well, you know, especially the stuff that people can see now on Substack about covered calls and cash cured puts, because I will tell you what, this is the best market for trading covered calls and cash cured puts.
Just because of the increased pricing of everything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the volatility goes up, options get more expensive. When it goes down, you can sell puts. And if you're doing it as an investment, if you get assigned on those puts, great, even better. I'm going to sell this 30 years from now.
That is the key thing that I think people forget about when they try to deploy some of these strategies, is you really have to have your investor hat on and be buying or only doing these on stocks that you're comfortable owning for the next 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I remember during like the COVID meltdown or whatever in the mm-hmm. market. So, you know, when it started out, it started, you know, trickle, trickle, then phew. And as it was kind of like falling day after day after day, I put a video out there and put it on YouTube that said, oh, you know, hey, here's what I'm doing. I'm selling puts on the S&P 500. And you always get these trolls.
Of course.
And so this guy goes, what are you, stupid? You're selling puts. I mean, the market's going down. Are you an idiot? Oh, you know, and he's just busting my chops. And I'm like, I mean, look, I've been doing this long enough.
Would you see that post? Does that make you think, oh, maybe I don't know what I'm doing? Or do you look at that and be like, man, I remember being at that point in my career, and I hope you make it to the next point.
Yeah, definitely more the latter. Right. Like when you've done this long enough, and probably, I don't know, you know, I've collected a little bit of gray hair here, I guess. I mean, I don't have to prove anything to this guy. Like, I get it. I know. Like, I have made thousands of mistakes and did thousands of things right and everything in the middle. You know, like I've seen it, I've done it. I have no ego. I have no ego. So yeah, you know, he said it. I'm like, okay, well, you know, okay, buddy. I don't have anything to tell you.
Yeah. Other than sorry.
Yeah.
That probably hurt to miss out on all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting that, especially you reaching out at a point in time when I've actually been considering taking a closer look at options again, because I prefer trading futures. And since the new administration's come around, like, I just can't stomach 100-point ES candles on the 5-minute. Like, that's a little much. But with options, there's a lot more. Like, options are risk defined. I can define my risk just by my position sizing, and that's something that appeals to me, to be able to mitigate the downside potentials of some of these you know, wild, volatile moves that can happen.
History isn't just boring names and dates. It's weird, messy, and full of what-were-they-thinking moments. The Buck Starts Here dives into the financial fiascos, questionable deals, and outright chaos that helped build America, $1 at a time. We mix in serious history from a fresh perspective, real, deep dives into the numbers and the moments that shaped the country without the boring lecture. From presidential blunders to almost states and the time an international war almost started over a pig, we break down the key events that made, and nearly broke, the nation. It's the fascinating untold history you won't find in the textbooks. Subscribe to the Buck Starts Here podcast for a deeper look at presidential history that's anything but dull.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back Fresh off a rebrand and ready to help is Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The king stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo vs. Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern, live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Yeah, that is my favorite thing about options. I was over at, this is really fun. I was over at our friend's house on Saturday night, and I see these people once a week at my house, at their house, at other friend's house. We've gone on vacations together. We've been literally like in different countries together, like for like 12 years, whatever. And so the guy, the husband, he's like, yeah, you know, I'm thinking about taking some time off work and, you know, maybe early retirement. And I think I'm going to start trading options. And so his wife goes, you are not trading options. It's like, what the hell? Like, this is what, like, really? Like, that's what you're saying? Why? Because a lot of people look at them as these assets of risk. And they are, but like, you got to look at both sides of it. They're risk management tools.
Right.
If you want to get massive leverage with it and go crazy, go for it. You can actually do that.
The market doesn't reward reckless behavior.
right. But if you want to define your risk and actually trade with lower risk, then great, do that. And, you know, you're probably better off.
Right. I think one of the hardest things that people have when it comes to trading at the options is the recognizing that not always cheaper is better.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
How often are you, when you're making your, like, do you trade more like in the money, deeper in the money, like, I don't know, like 80 or higher delta calls? Or do you prefer trading like out the money and then trying to like hit home runs on like really cheap lottery tickets?
Yeah, that's a, oh boy, there's a lot to that answer.
Right?
Yeah. Ooh, gosh. Because the market changes so much, I have a small handful of different strategies that I use, and they're all very, very different.
Okay.
Some are like, well, like today with the market up, I executed one of my short squeeze strategies, which is exactly just buying some cheap out of the money options and, you know, trying to get a nice, really leveraged profit.
Right. But it's a specific scenario that you're utilizing that vehicle.
Yeah. It's a very, very specific setup. And when you're buying out of the money options, like, I know that there's a greater chance of me losing on this trade than making on it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I lose, it'll be a tiny bit. If I make, it can be a lot.
Right, right. Outsize or asymmetric risk opportunity.
Yes. But then I have other strategies too, where it's like credit spreads, where, hey, as long as the stock doesn't go up a lot, I make money.
Talk to me about credit spreads then, because that's something I've talked to some other guys who like options, and they are not big fans of credit spreads because of the drag that they think it puts on the portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that you have to get good at, mm-hmm. like anything else. They're actually kind of just the opposite of what I described. It's asymmetric risk, but the other way.
Right. You're trying to take advantage of the fact that most of these end up, they're insurance premiums. So whoever's selling the premium is generally the one incentivized who has the lesser. He's usually taking on the risk and getting paid and compensated for it, but the odds are going to be stacked to where it should be profitable for him in the long run. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, exactly. Just to add to that, I should have they're high probability trades. I should have more winners.
Right.
And the people who don't like them, it's because sometimes when you have a loser, it can wipe out five winners.
Yes. Yes, it can. But that is usually your own fault.
Yes. Yes. Right. I think anybody can get good at any style of trading. It's just a matter of getting good at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I actually ran into a similar issue where I was paper trading ER or earnings report trades. I was selling premium going into the earnings report and closing out the next morning. Just the idea, like, you capture the volatility, the decrease of volatility once the outcome becomes known. I was finding that I had done it with the wings attached to it because I didn't like the idea of having potential for uncapped losses on any of these trades, especially when you're trading some of these with 300% IV at the time. Like, you can get some pretty big moves on some of these. But the wings actually were taking all the profitability away. If I had taken off the wings, that I would have actually been making money. But like you mentioned, there's that one event where, like, I sold one on a stock that I probably shouldn't have done. And that one loss ended up wiping out 3 months worth of work. And so really what it comes down to is you got to have big pockets and you got to be able to put on a lot of these trades because you need the aggregate of them working for you. You can't just cherry pick them.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, with any type of trading strategy, I would say traders put too much emphasis on this trade,
mm-hmm.
yep. instead of this series of trades, this system.
Yeah. So how do we get better at paying or caring more about the system and less about the individual trade then?
it's the psychological factor. I mean, one thing is those folks who have signed up as a student at Market Taker, mm-hmm. they just listen to me tell them all the time, it's a system. Work the system works. Management is what makes money. Don't worry about the one. And, you just hear somebody tell you that over and over, and you don't listen to it the first time or the second time, don't really listen to it the third time. But if you have tenacity to keep going and you make enough mistakes, finally you listen. And finally, you get it. Like, oh, I see what people were saying. Do I make money in the long run?
If I don't have Dan, then what I just need is a message repeating on a loop that plays every half hour or so. It just says, it's a system, trust the system, and I should start to see results in a couple months.
Yes. You could use like your mom's voice, your wife's voice, somebody. Nancy Grace.
So which chapter of the book are you working on right now?
Oh, goodness. I am on chapter 4. Still kind of laying the groundwork. This one is all on cash secured puts. Mm-hmm. And so consequently, that means some of the I record some of the podcast episodes in advance. So
yeah. Have to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. Consequently, some of the next episodes will be on the cash cured puts. And, you know, like as I'm writing, like the last thing I want to do in the book or the podcast is to say, this is what a cash cured put. Here's how it works.
Right,
you know,
right.
Just, you know, I mean, go to
Investopedia does that well enough.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I have to do that for the people who don't know, but I try and make it A, more interesting, and B, give people the things that they actually need to succeed at the time that I'm explaining what it is.
Can you give an example?
Yeah. So, here's a great example. So, I did my last chapter, chapter 3, was on, it was how and why covered calls work. Mm-hmm. This chapter is how and why cash secured puts work.
Okay.
So, the first half, how, you know, okay, here, this is how they work. But giving a little bit more awareness to, you know, there's different motivations here. And, you know, it's not just this silly profit and loss diagram. You know, there's reasons.
You're putting some nuance into it as opposed to just the institutional definition.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I want people to understand how to do them.
Right, right.
But then the part of why it works, like, nobody talks about that. Hmm. And, like, there's some obvious reasons why it seems that they work. Just like, hey, I collect this premium, and if it doesn't go too high and I leave money on the table, or too low and I lose money, if it's in that sweet spot, which is actually the most common occurrence, I should just bring in money and grind out cash. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of a false reason. It is a reason, but like the options pricing model negates that reason. Hmm. Because what the options pricing model does is it takes the likelihood of success and it generates the price of the option based on that. So if something is a very high probability of success, well, you know, you're not going to make a lot on it.
Right, right.
And you might even lose a lot on it if you're wrong.
Right.
So the reason why covered calls and cash secured puts actually work is because of something called the risk premium. So since 1987, the options trade in such a way where if you look back over time, mm-hmm. they have been overpriced since 1987. Now, that is statistically on average. Not every stock's options are overpriced.
No, but options in general should be overpriced. We should expect that because, like you said, that's the premium that somebody gets to take for accepting the risk for you.
Yes, yes. You know, like, I mean, with an insurance policy, I know that the actuaries worked out the math and they said, hey, you know, this car is going to cost us statistically on average $700 a year, you know, if it goes 1,000, you know, if we have 10,000 people, all these cars, you know, it's going to cost right. $700 a year. So we're not going to charge $700 in premium. We're going to charge $800. We right. got to make money.
Yes, exactly.
And me, like, I'm happy paying that just because I have peace of mind.
Right. know, because like, when you need it.
Yeah.
You need it.
Yes. And that's just exactly what it's like with options. Like mm-hmm. they're a little bit overpriced, and that's because people use them as insurance and they want the peace of mind.
Yeah. I love that. I hope that you keep doing more of that. What other chapters then do you have planned for the book? What's coming up next then?
Ooh, so yeah, after this chapter, I mean, the first four chapters are kind of laying the groundwork. I mean, the first four chapters are basically what everybody else's books on Covered Calls of Kashmir books are.
Yeah, it's the next ones that I'm curious about. Those are the ones that are going to be what set you apart, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, a big part of it is it's sort of a combination and a marriage of both the mindset, the plan, and the management.
Oh, I like this. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, just understanding that, sure, on this trade, the covered call might go through, you know, first I set an objective. Hey, I want to skate. I just want to collect this premium and do it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
This trade, that might happen. The next one, it might happen. The next one, it might not.
Mm-hmm.
It might go up through the strike. And I don't worry about that. I don't say, oh, I left money on the table. This is terrible. I say to myself, oh, yeah, I understand the statistical nature of trading. So I knew that this was a possibility that could happen. And so here's what I do when that happens.
So in the moment, you're addressing those thoughts that pop up that criticize you that say, oh, you did something bad. You did something wrong. You're confronting that immediately in the moment and saying, no, I did this to plan. I understand that there's variance and that there's going to be some, you know, things that happen that are going to be probabilities. And this was the day that the probabilities came and decided they're taking my shares. Like, what am I going to do?
Exactly. And, you know, that most people, like I study a lot of like behavioral psychology and behavioral economics.
Mm-hmm.
And people's brains just are not wired to really understand statistics.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, actually. What's the one of my favorite studies that I looked at as like just rating yourself, doing a self-assessment. And it was like answering just a group of like 10 questions, but trying to do it with a 70% confidence rate, meaning like you give a range. And people are really bad at that. People are really bad at what's the population of the earth? Like, you want to make sure you're within that 70%. I'm probably going to have to give an answer between 6 and 11 billion. Like, that's what you have to do to get that. But most people have trouble when it comes to like actually thinking about it in terms of probabilities and averages like that. And they want to do better. They want to try to squeeze that in and they end up shortchanging themselves and they end up beating like 30%. Accuracy across something that they're aiming for 70%. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's people's brains just are not made to work that way.
So how do you combat that then?
You mean for me personally?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't know at what point I started to think the way that I think. Mm-hmm. But it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
It could have been after having like worked on the trading floor and shadowed a trader before I started trading. And I remember back in that time, this like I was, oh, geez, like 24 or something. And we're out with a group of friends and it was kind of overcast. And we walked to this restaurant that we're going to, and like supposedly there's like a 60% chance of rain or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so the maitre d' or whatever says, oh, you know, do you want to sit inside or outside? And I just start to open my mouth and my friend says, oh, outside. I'm like, outside? There's a 60% chance of rain. He's like, oh, it's not going to rain. Don't worry about it. I'm like, and so, I don't know, I was a little cranky about it. So we sit outside, it doesn't rain. And he's like, yeah, see, I told you, it's not going to rain. And I said, yeah, but I still had the most rational decision.
Right.
Like, even the fact that it didn't rain, I was actually still right.
Yes. Doesn't matter because the odds were still on your side.
Right.
Right.
And to get traders to, I don't know. I don't know when my brain started to work that way. Maybe it always did. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
It's interesting, though. I wonder if there is a difference between like people who tend to want to gamble more versus trade, like actually trade well, like if they're more likely to gamble on things like sitting outside on a day that's calling for 60% chance for rain versus, you know, the guy who goes and sits inside like a reasonable person, the guy who wears a seatbelt every day, you know. But then that should just be more about risk then at that point, right? Risk tolerance?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I think it's about knowing what to do or not knowing what to do. Because, like, you know, you mentioned gambling. I mean, there are people who make a living gambling because they figure out how to put the odds in their favor.
Right.
There are people who sit down at poker tables and they might not win this time. But
yeah, but see, I don't call that gambling. There's no professional roulette players.
There aren't, you know, I mean, there's professional blackjack players, card counters, right?
Yes.
And so, like, to me, that's the difference. Like, okay, if you're a gambler as a trader, well, you can be if you're the card counter or you're the poker player who knows what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and the question does become, do you call that gambling? And I've heard different schools of thought on that, you know.
See, like, I think you made the right decision. I think he was gambling, but the problem was he was gambling for no real benefit. The only benefit is to get to sit outside, but what the risk of that is being wet and your food and you're not having a terrible restaurant experience. What's the point of putting that at risk? Like, I do think you made the more rational decision now that I think more about it.
Yeah. Like, he's the guy who sits down at a poker table and, you know, puts in his buy-in and, you know, is betting and says, oh, by the way, what wins, a flush or a straight? It's like, okay. Yeah.
I'll tell you when we get to the river.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Right.
Dan, I got one last question for you, and this is going to be completely off topic, but when I was doing a little bit of research, trying to do some search on the internet, I came across Dan Passarelli that played whiteout for the Illinois Redbirds in 2006. I was curious if that was you.
That was not me.
Okay. So I see Redbird Stadium here in Peoria, or at least a sign for it, and I was like, man, is that... Turns out they play in Normal, which is about 30 minutes away from me, but I thought that would have been amazing if that was true.
Yeah. No, I'm about an hour and a half north of there.
Oh, okay. So you're probably up closer to Chicago then still?
Yeah. South suburbs of Chicago. Yep.
Okay. Well, dang it. I was hoping we could have some common ground there we could talk about, but I guess I'll have to find it somewhere else. I think that's probably going to be a good place to call it today. So please join me in thanking Dan Passarelli for coming back to visit with us. You can show your thanks by visiting markettaker.com/substack or by clicking on the links in the show notes. Check out one of his many options related books. Also that podcast, Wealth Building with Options. They can find that on the Substack.
You can find it on the Substack or just go straight to Spotify or Apple or whatever.
You guys on YouTube still too?
Yeah, YouTube, everything.
Okay, I think I had your YouTube link on there last time. I'll make sure that's in there too. I'll be back soon with another exciting guest to help illuminate the path to trading success. But until that day, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a green week.
Live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The king stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern, live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.